free ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From the beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast, and especially warm welcome to the 8 paying patrons we have on the show. If everyone was more like you, we'd have no need for heaven. We'd already be there. So thank you very much. Very generous of you. NBL Pocket Pod, what are we talking about? The finals, the teams that got eliminated, which feels like a lifetime ago now, but that is the Wildcats and Southeast Melbourne. And then we're going to talk about the finals. Obviously, game one was last night. Kings took it 112-68. That's a 44-point win margin. Is it indicative and predictive of the series and how it's going to go? The Kings shot 66%, only attempted 24 threes, whereas the 36ers went in for 37 three-point attempts and shot 35% from the field all over. Cotton had 4 turnovers, 10 points maybe. There was a 20-plus rebound advantage to Sydney. We're going to talk about grand final predictions and premonitions, but I think actually first we're going to reel it right back and talk about the Wildcats and Southeast Melbourne. I wrote this script on the 18th of March. It's now the 22nd, the day after game one, so it's fun to look at what I thought of then. I'm going to stick with what I've got, of course. I'm not changing this, but just fun to see what's going on. But before we do that, let's go Southeast Melbourne. Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, their season came to an end. It seems like just over a week ago now. Let's talk about what they've got on the books and what they're going to do. I'm calling this the Southeast Melbourne season autopsy. I gave their season a B+. I thought they were really good. Their finals campaign had that amazing game from Sobey, but they got beaten. So 2-1. Won their home game, lost the away games. I've been seeing people talk a lot about on Twitter about a lack of defense in game one and game three from Southeast Melbourne. Either A, the energy wasn't there, or B, the whistle wasn't there, allowing them to defend the way they wanted to. I didn't see it like that. Honestly, I saw game one, they were a little shell-shocked, maybe tired, or just punked on the road. Game three was the one where I thought, no, the defensive pressure's kind of there. Like, John Brown gave away a bad tech. Like, they were into it. They were aggressive. Honestly, in game three, I saw a bunch of locals no showing in a big game. Clark was the only bright spot on the offensive end. They just didn't have it. Choke? No, not a choke. But just when you let all the air out of the balloon at the one time, just total deflation. It was unimpressive. But to play the other side of the coin, Cotton scored 109 points across the three games. 36 makes on 63 attempts. That's 57%. 17 turnovers. Pardon me. 17 assists. 11 turnovers. Cotton forced his way to the foul line 28 times, connecting on 24 of them. There was nothing you could do against this guy that wasn't going to result in a high percentage play. And then also, this is the stat that's more incredible. No, it's not more incredible than the points and all that production, but Cotton played in all but 3 minutes and 26 seconds across this series. Not in one game. That's the amount of rest most guys get. Most star players only play 28 to 32 minutes. This guy only got 3 minutes and 26 seconds rest the entire series. It actually harpens back into what I was talking about with the Wildcats, or I'm about to talk about the Wildcats, but at the start of the year in the offseason, Danny Mills and Mark Arena were saying how, with Cotton, you can't really build a balanced roster. Now, whether they were that specific, I don't think so, but they were certainly saying, we want to build a balanced roster like Illawarra, who won the championship. That's what wins you in the NBL. Well, Adelaide have probably the most imbalanced roster in the world, and Cotton has totally carried them to the final. So And then you look at what else they said, which is like balanced team, 3-day waiting period, no regrets. I kind of feel like Billy Bean in Moneyball. It's like you're talking all this nonsense, you know?
What the fuck are you talking about, man?
That sums it all up. Going back to the Cotton yelling at Wells thing, it seems like it's ancient history now, but maybe it'll play out in the Kings series. I'm going to go to another soundbite. Cotton is playing with such a chip on his shoulder this season. It's clearly to prove Wells wrong, Mills wrong, Arena wrong, Wildcat management, Wildcat coaches, all of it. You know, Wildcat fans in general, they seem to still support Cotton from what I've seen online, but still he's looking to prove everybody wrong. And I hated it. I hated to see it. And when Wells got yelled at, he completely went back into his shell like a frightened turtle. But there's Cotton playing with a chip on his shoulder, and he's got this fuck on the sidelines trying to pretend to be the star attraction. And we smack referees on the nose when they interrupt the play. And we say, oh, you know, we're not here to see the refs. Well, whack, coaches. I'm not here to see you either. You know, set your plays, set your strategy on the sideline. Pretend like you're doing something on the sideline. I don't know what, they don't actually do anything. That's why Lindsay Gaze used to just sit all game, because he realized, oh, I'm actually a total footnote in this adventure unless I'm calling a timeout. So just sit down and shut the fuck up. And I think with Cotton, it's like when Woody is going off at the IP, the International Basketball Brother Tournament for Unity or whatever it is.
He ain't got shit.
And he's losing it, and Wesley has to shut him down and calm him down and remind him that this is about money, this is about greed. You got that, and I'm not going to let you fuck it up for me. And that was what Cotton in that conversation was saying.
This is about money. This is about greed. You got that? Look, man, I need this $5,000. And I am not about to let you blow this for me. No fucking way.
You know, the team with the better team won as far as South East Melbourne versus Adelaide. It just seems that way. The only thing this series told me is that SEM are relying on some guys that they need to upgrade or have some more insurance for. Lewis and Awandu. I didn't think Awandu was very good all year. And then the next star kid, you just can't play him in big games like that. It's not going to happen at 17, 18 years old. A lot of people poked a lot of shot at Sobey in this series. Nathan Sobey in the games on the road this finals, two games played, 15 of 45, 33%, seven turnovers, two losses. So not great on the road, can't deny it, especially not in game three. Nathan Sobey in games on the road in last year's finals, 5 of 6 and a loss to Perth. That was at home. But yeah, in the away games, 13 of 30, 6 turnovers and 2 losses to Illawarra. So not a great showing on the road for Sobey. And, you know, was this series a referendum on whether he can take you to the next level if he's your best local? I think that's a part of a bit of a crass question, to be honest. And there's not a huge sample size, especially. I haven't gone back to a huge sample size. I can't be bothered. Real GM's not a nice website to navigate. All I can say is I like Sobey's game, and there was plenty to love about game two. They just need insurance for his, I wouldn't say erratic, but just they needed more insurance. They're a thin roster compared to certainly Sydney and not so much Adelaide, but definitely the top teams. Looking at next year, and we are going to do this, we're going to look at who's under contract for SEM and them going forward. Sobey turns 36 next season. Here's who South East Melbourne have under rotation, under contract for NBL 27, Glover, Foxwell, but I've got an asterisk here because, you know, I believe he departs for LSU and his college commitments. And then you've got Hunter and Sobey, who are both on mutual options, which you'd think the team would pick up. Rotation players out of contract for South East Melbourne. You've got Coach Josh King, Clark, Awandu, Brown III, Gack, Mitchell, and Lewis, who's a next star who will likely depart. Although I think he's got a second year on the contract, might pick it up. Looking at that, and who should come back out of that list? Josh King, obviously. I think Clark showed his value. Can't give you production big time in the regular season. Needs to preserve his body, but when you allow him to preserve his body, can do pretty well. Awandu, I'm not mad about. Brown III, I think, is really, really good. He's awesome. Gack, handy, but had a bit of bad luck or had a bit of problem with the team this year. I don't know what it was. DJ Mitchell was a big part of Brisbane a couple of years ago, and this season didn't do a lot, but I like his game. And then the next star, so I'd bring back most of those guys. I think the import target for South East Melbourne has to be a legit guard who can defend his position, set up others, maybe not score a ton, but score at a high percentage. The departure of Foxwell and Sobey's volatility creates a vacuum that South East Melbourne need to take a little bit more seriously. Clark can fill the latter, but not the former, as in Foxwell's departure. I think Foxwell's departure actually gives them a real... It hones their focus as to what they need. They need a set-up guard who can control pace of play, but defend his position. Tough thing to find on the open market these days, but the way the NBA is trending, you're seeing how these smaller guards are not heavily prized. So maybe that's a trickle-down effect to the lowly NBL. Yeah, I'm actually excited for South East Melbourne in the offseason because I think they've got a really good core returning. They're going to have to overpay or pay more for King and Brown. So hopefully they've got the money to do it. But I think that their deficiencies are very obvious, and that's good. That gives them a chance to really focus. So, yeah, let's go back up. Before we do grand final stuff, let's look at the Wildcats again. So season comes to an end for the Wildcats. Getting swept by the Kings, who, you know, after game one of what we just saw, look like the likely champions going forward. I'll just go with what I've got scripted here. So, Perth Wildcats autopsy, season grade, I have them as a B minus slash a B. I didn't think the year was doom and gloom, and we're going to go into why. Looking forward, though, before we look back, looking forward, rotation players under contract for NBL 27. John Reilly's under contract until NBL 28. They got Joel Lualachul under contract, Detch, Lat Mann's a team option, Windler, Doolittle, Jaron Reilly, and Ben Hench. Rotation players out of contract, Duke, Pepper, Aquera. Three pretty big names. So, in the offseason, spoke about it before, Mills and Arena preached that roster balance was the way to an NBL championship. Even if that was their aspiration, I don't think they nailed it this year. Maybe they thought Detch was going to be a player, but he didn't play under Reilly. So they had this glaring gap at point guard, and they lacked so much ball protection. They had so many careless turnovers in the backcourt. They had so many careless turnovers and empty plays. So they didn't quite achieve the roster balance they were after. Under the umbrella of roster balance, there's no denying this team has greater roster balance than last season's Wildcats. But that depth, you know, the Wildcats do have good depth, has come at the expense of great heights, namely the heights of Cotton's play. So you need to find that balance between the two. As a condemnation to Arena and Mills, Cotton's team is through to the grand finals for the first time since 2020-21 that a Cotton team has done that, gone that far. So the Wildcats in that regard have not had any movement. This is another year where they've gone into the semifinals and not made it. And I believe in the past they've not made it when they were the favourite. This year they weren't, and I don't think anyone had them going over Sydney. Pushed Sydney in a couple of games. Oh, sorry, game one, lost by a point, which is kind of like John Reilly's catchphrase. If his LinkedIn bio, you know, here you got to give a little quote, it'd be like, I lose games by 1 point. This is me. This is what I do. That was Reilly's fourth season. Just completed his fourth season as coach. Of the current coaches with their current teams, only Vickerman, Ford, and Roth have as long or longer tenures. Vickerman, the longest of that list. And you think for a team with only 10 teams that changes coaches pretty quick and swiftly, you know, some due to poor performance, some due to other options. Reilly's been given a very, very generous and patient, I wouldn't say apprenticeship because he's beyond an apprentice, but he's been given a lot of time to perform, four seasons, and now he's got three more. So he's going to have, if he sees out this contract, he's going to have the better part of a decade to have instigated winning in a win-now league. I don't want to hear development and all this sort of stuff. The NBL resets the deck every year with a soft cap, and it's no draft, and it's win or die. That's what makes the NBL better than other products. There's not, oh yeah, we've just drafted a guy and it's a 3-year expectation. No. Nut up or shut up. And right now, Reilly's leaning into the shut up camp. Semi-final still achievement and not bottoming out, but also this is the Perth Wildcats. They typically win a lot of championships and they haven't for a long time under him. The 1 point losses and the lack of calling a timeout in game one, I can't fault it because I like the strategy. However, it didn't pay dividends. I like it with most teams. I didn't like it with this team. I like the strategy if you have Cotton or Ricky Grace as your surrogate on the floor. Not when it's Doolittle, and certainly not when it's his first year as the first option. I think there was enough sample size within the season to go, okay, you know, yes, not calling a timeout, not letting a defense get set up is kind of fun, and I like it personally. However, it's not working for this team. Took them too long to figure that out. And then the next question I have going into their next season, is Jaron really the Wildcats' starting point guard of the future? If he is, then what are you looking for from that third import slot? They've already come out in the news via Craig O'Donoghue and said, no, point guard's needed. So they see really as an off-the-bench guy, which I think is the better role. I don't think he's a winning championship starting point guard yet in his second year in the NBA. I think that's pretty obvious and fair to say, but a really good sixth guy can come in at either one or two and blaze away. I think he's going to be great. So they know what they're looking for their import spot, much like Southeast Melbourne in that way, which is good. But the question I think going into the offseason for the Wildcats is, are we sure about Dylan Windler? I can't deny that I hate, absolutely hate, his lack of durability and dependability. I hate it. He gets hurt, lower leg injuries all the time. That's been the MO of his career. He now is 29, turning 30 next year, I believe. It's sad. You look at it, the NBA injuries are bad. The injuries at every stop in exactly the same spots are a drag. But is that the Wildcats? Well, he's contracted, so yes, it is the Wildcats' problem. It's sad, but it's a fact. Can a team that depends on him to produce manage his health to make a chip run? The torn fasciitis. The way that got torn in just a basketball maneuver, not even a play, not contact, just fell down under the basket and got hurt. It's just not what you bet. It's not what you put your money behind, for me anyway. Going to Duke. I think we can all agree Duke is not the guy and won't be returning. Even in taking into account his injuries and the fact is he just couldn't run. He couldn't finish at the cup and he couldn't really run the team. And when they did for 5 minutes in game three, it did not look good. Amazing athlete. Amazing third import if you're just looking for sort of pops of athleticism and energy and so forth. Yeah, really good option. If you have a functional basketball need that needs filling, he's not the guy. But this all comes down to the fact that they rushed the signing of an import, not Jones. We forget about Jones. This was the Wildcats post-Cotton. They signed Mason Jones and thought that was Jesus Christ. They rushed the signing to get a player when they headed into Adelaide, and that was it, and it showed. This team, and more specifically the ownership, will always be the ownership that let Cotton go. This is the way it's going to be. Now, Cotton himself, his dislike of Arena and Mills in particular, plus a little fun funneling from some funky sources also played a part, but as a result, this iteration of the Wildcats will always be the Kevin Fetter line, the ex Mr. Britney Spears, the first and last name won't matter. That's just what this iteration is going to be. And every finals, when they don't make it, it's going to be, should have signed Cotton. It's going to be worse. I don't know what was worse, overpaying or what you think was overpaying Cotton, and always knowing like, oh yeah, we didn't get to really build the team we want. We didn't get to play with the toys we want. Or, you know, he bosses around our players and he's, you know, a strong locker room presence he's demanding of our coach. Or every time you fail, people pointing to Bryce Cotton and drive you nuts. So either way, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's kind of like 1984, George Orwell. You've had the thought now. Once you have the thought, you may as well express it. I want to break out a little bit and go back into John Riley. The no timeouts and one-point losses are a condemnation of his abilities. Not a fatal one, but what team loses that many one-point games? Come on. This team had a lot of empty possessions, as I said before. Part of this is a personnel problem, the lack of a PG, but exacerbated by Willie's style of coaching. The lack of recalibration. This is what I thought was really bad from Riley. The lack of recalibration when Dellavedova went to Doolittle. And there was no effort to force action in the paint. Touches for Doolittle. The touches for the bigger player, that was poor. And I think I heard Joey Wright and Buddy Nodge comment on that in their podcast. And it's certainly something I noticed as well. Really has been given and is continuing to get a very courteous and patient apprenticeship, an opportunity by Perth, but this is not a cupcake league. Very few coaches get this lengthy a chance, get this lengthy of a chance to produce. Semi-final sweeps don't blow back the hair of Perth fans. So, however, having said all that and slagged off really Windler, Duke, and ownership, however, I do like the fact that a rotation of Luala Chul, Doolittle, Windler when healthy, Jaron Rilley, an import of quality at the point guard spot, Henschel, Pepper, and Wagstaff, just those eight, is a team of quality and, dare I say it, a contender for the grand final and the championship, therefore. The ingredients are there. Right now, it's the recipe. That's the issue. They're a couple of pieces away and a healthy Rilley who makes them better. I don't think a healthy Rilley would have made a difference this year. I don't think they were getting through Sydney. And if they got to Adelaide, I don't think they're getting through them either. I think they finished where they finished. But there is that these ingredients are good. You could see where, and you know, we've only seen game one of the finals, and now we're going to broach into that topic, but we've only seen game one. But we saw where the total lack of length and size and athleticism of Adelaide, putting aside Cheatham and Cameron, but the total lack of, and Cotton, of course, the lack of size and length is killed Adelaide. The guys like Cooks, Malawach, Suarez not really, but he's got pretty good size and strength and speed and stuff. You know, and Dellavedova, who hasn't got either of those things but can maintain his position. But certainly Galloway, but Cooks is the driving force of all that length. Like, they just monster everything. Whereas Wells loves to go with these grounded small lineups of Cotton, who's pretty swift and athletic. But, you know, Isaac White and Jenkins and Humphreys when he's out there. And Kenya, like, there's just not that dynamism whatsoever. Whereas, you know, the Wildcats had that to a degree. Doolittle, huge athlete. Really, really quick on his feet. Duke was a good athlete. So, honest to God, if I had my choice, I wouldn't return Windler. And I'd bring back Duke over Windler. I just thought Duke gave you so many options athletically. He got hurt, but he had an actual freakish injury, not just a degradation injury. So, anyway, I'm blabbing the point. Let's do some grand final stuff. So, as I say, I wrote this script on the 18th of the 3rd. We're now on the 22nd of the 3rd, so 4 or 5 days ago. I want to talk about the schedule. Grand final schedule. Game 1 was yesterday, Saturday, March 21st. Game 2 is going to be Friday, March 22nd. We're going to wait 5 days from today, a whole working week before we get any more basketball. And game 3 is going to be on March 29th, so only one or two game gap. And then game 4 will be on April 1st, 3 days later. So very wide schedule at the top, and then closer and closer as they come together. So that's why game 1 is even more a bigger factor. So if you've picked Sydney in this series, I don't know what you were thinking ahead of time, but it just means like now you've got the team that's down is going to have to chase wins games 3 and 4 while being tied and everything. At the start and before this season began with game 1, Sydney were $1.39 to win the series, Adelaide $2.94. That would have obviously blown out a little bit after this game 1 loss. This is what I had written here, and I feel pretty good about it, just quietly. If you think this series was going to be like it was in game 1, like a total lolly scramble where, you know, Sydney get the best of Adelaide and get the better of Cotton and hold his production. And then on their end, it's just a total, like they did, just a run up the score where everyone scores. Just quietly, it's $17 to take the field, so outside of Cotton and Kendrick Davis, to be points leaders across the series. And I've got here, just depends on how much you like Craig to explode, but Davis was the top scorer in game 1, 24. Suarez behind him, 22. So I thought it was going to be Craig, who just in a defensive effort was just going to absolutely smack on points. But you could see a game where if all these are blowouts and they sit Davis, or Davis isn't that keen about, you know, they're not that, Sydney aren't that resolute or militant about running through him to get high percentage players, and they're happy to just come down the court and run and gun, it can be anyone to top score this series. Anyway, that's there. I've got here at the start of thing, who will Dellavedova guard this time? Well, we kind of got an answer. When he was on Bryce Cotton, it was some of the best defense I've ever seen in the NBL. Certainly this year, and certainly going back the last sort of 5-10 years, he's an incredible player, and he drives winning in the NBL. Wherever he goes, the organization becomes serious because there's no fucking around, and every organization he's on kind of spends. They see like, oh, we, you know, we're actually good, we're going to spend. And the Kings have done that. I mean, bringing on Torrey Craig, that's an expensive maneuver late in the season. So he just brings such legitimacy to teams on and off the court. And, yeah, he can't score and shoot and is bad to watch on offense. Unattractive to watch. But the defense, just, yeah, just incredible. So who will he guard this time? It's a bit of Cotton. It's a bit of everyone, really. The 36ers have the best player in the series, but the Kings, again, dominate spots 2 through 8. I want to talk about two people on Twitter now. Adam Westerhout is like saying on Twitter, it was a great tweet, I think I may have retweeted it. He's like, Perth fans are all too familiar with seeing Cotton getting blitzed and doubled off screens and this amount of pressure and the size thrown at him. This is not uncommon. This happened during his series, you know, when he was coached by Riley. This happened when he was coached by, what's his name? Trevor Gleason. So this is not a surprise. This is not a new strategy from Gorgon. What's interesting is the total lack of counter attack from Wells and Adelaide. They just took it on the chin. And then I saw in his press conference, he's saying we don't need to make any adjustments. I disagree with the coach of the year candidate. So the question I've got here is, who will be the second best player in this series for Adelaide? Do we like Rakosevic against this front line of the Kings? Cameron against Craig and Mullerwatch? And same question about Jenkins and Vasiljevic. And then Isaac Humphries, you know, who my new nickname for him is Disappearing Ink. So I think if you look at game one, what do Adelaide do? Do they run with a huge lineup? Do they secure the backboard? That's something they got to do. I mean, I think I looked at those game one stats where they got out-rebounded plus 20. Because they were getting out-rebounded, the pressure when they actually did finally finish a defensive stand, get a rebound and go the other way, was so seldom and so rare that they were just under pressure to, you know, score big and score and just put them under so much pressure. Do you focus on securing the backboard? And in which case, do you play like a Humphries, Rakosevic, Cheatham? You can't play all three together, but you probably have to have two of them on the court at the same time and you have to slow things down. But I don't know if there's any way forward. Sorry, guys. Oh, but the second person I wanted to tweet, quote, or whatever you call it, is Mike Lifts. Great energy and conversation on Twitter about the NBL. Was very keen on this podcast coming out earlier. Apologies to him. And the reason why I didn't get this podcast out earlier is because on the days or at the times I wanted to record, I ended up going to the gym with much inspiration from Mike Lifts, who posts really frank, honest, and achievable advice for people going to the gym. So that's a good Twitter follow. Total off-grid, off-subject chat there, but I think Adelaide are FUC Cade. I don't know what they do. If Cotton's not going to get off, I don't like this team. And Wells is running these small lineups. Oh, I think it's a disaster. And I even had here my script from the 18th. No frills or thrills from me. Sydney in four games. Their defensive options on Cotton are too strong. And the lack of offensive tension breakers for the 36ers, I think, is a death sentence. And I know it can, you don't know for a fact that I wrote that before game one, but I think a lot of people would have said similar. So there's no Nostradamus here. I think that was all pretty obvious. And I think 4 games will be an achievement for Adelaide. Looking at that game one, Cotton was facing this meat grinder of Della Vadova, and Cook's coming off, blitzing him or hard showing him off a screen, and then he's banging into all these big bodies and Muller Watch and Torrey Craig come off a pick, and it's Torrey Craig, 6'6", huge body standing there. And then at the other end, Davis comes down and I think had 3 or 4 possessions in a row on Isaac White by himself. Isaac White, nice little player. Not any of those names I mentioned defensively. This thing's a fucking disaster. As I say, it's only 0-1 in the column of the finals for Adelaide. They're down 1 game. There's still technically potentially four more games to go. If they can get one, I'd be impressed by them. But they got to slow the pace. They do have a fraction of a size advantage. Maybe execute that. Jenkins kind of looked okay, but not an athlete. Anyway, I'm belaboring the point. I did. That's all I had. I had 5 dot points on the grand final because I don't think it's going to be particularly enriching. And that's that, guys. That is a look back at the teams that didn't make it and looking forward to games 2, 3, perhaps 4, and perhaps 5. That is NBL Pocket Podcast. We'll come back. Hopefully we can get Canyon and do like a, finals and everything wrap up and bring this sucker home and do something like that to wrap up the year. And then I'll see you all again in the off season if we decide to do the pod again. It's always up in debate, but it's always fun to just pop down a few things on paper. But these days you can just do it and publish it straight on Twitter. So podcasts are kind of dying in the ass, but people still listen to them when they're driving, maybe. Guys, I am blundering on. I will let you go. Enjoy games 2 through what I think is 4. Enjoy. Bye.